Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Problematic Fave Podcast. I'm your host, Dino A. Ramos. This week, we have a wonderful guest lined up for you. His name is Dylan Adler. You may recognize him from the social medias. He was also a writer on the Late Late Show with James Corden. He's wonderful. And we talk about Kung Fu Panda, which at first, you know, I was like, oh, this will be a fun one. But, you know, watch Kung Fu Panda a second time if you haven't watched it in a while. There's a lot of things going on there that we need to talk about. And we discuss it in this podcast. We have a wonderful conversation about it, especially about Tai Lung. We have a lot to say about that character. But yeah, revisiting this was also realizing that this came out during the start of Obama's, or like in the midst of Obama's America, is very interesting to watch. There's a lot of stuff that happened in the year that Kung Fu Panda came out, and I think it's kind of culture. We discuss it all. So without further ado, here is Dylan Adler with Kung Fu Panda.
In a land of tradition and honor, one Kung Fu master,
let's get started,
has trained five of the greatest warriors the world has ever known. But this master's biggest challenge has just arrived.
I'm coming!
DreamWorks Kung Fu Panda.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Your Problematic Fave Podcast. I am your host, Dina Ray Ramos, and this week we have a wonderful guest lined up. We have comedian, actor, writer, and musician, who was a writer on The Late Late Show with James Corden, and named a comic you should watch and will know by Vulture. He has also performed for Comedy Central and the New York Comedy Festival, amongst many a stand-up routine. He's on the Instagram. I see him all the time. I met him at Joyride. Please welcome the wonderful Dylan Adler.
Hey! You know,
thank you
for having me, bitch. I'm excited to be here. I'm so happy we met at the Joy Ride.
The Ride of Joys. The Ride of Joys premiere.
At the Ride of Joy, I met you, and it's like I've always, like, you know, I've been a fan of your work from afar, and, like, you know, now we've finally met in the flesh, which is always a good moment.
And the flesh. The flesh. Flesh is such a weird word, right? In the flesh.
Right?
But, oh no, but no, I've followed your career, you know, in terms of like writing and on James Corden, and just like on the grams and stuff. So I'm glad we met, and like, you know, I saw you there with just Tom. It was just a bunch of queerness there, and it was just so fun to see a bunch of other Asian queers among us.
Yes, it was all the Asians I could think of. It was really great, and there were good food, and it seemed like it was a wonderful premiere, to be honest.
Yeah. So before we get into your problematic fave, Dylan, how have you been doing lately? Don't hold back, because I know you recently made the big move, right? From the East to the West. How has that transition been? Because I know it's a big change.
Oh, it's been crazy. I'm adjusting. The adjustment is not smooth. But it's been good. You know, I like the city. I love the weather. I love the vibes. But I'm just still finding my rhythm and finding, like, my groove. And, like, you know, my, you know, finding the gaze. Finding my gaze.
Yeah. How long were you in New York before you moved to L.A.?
For 8 years.
Oh, yeah. So you were there. Yeah. You were there. And where were you before that?
Before that, I was in the Bay Area where I grew up.
Oh, wait. I lived in the Bay Area for like 10 years.
Really?
Before moving to LA. Yes. I lived in the city. And then before that, I lived in Dublin Pleasanton.
Dublin Pleasanton. Yes.
And my sister and my fam live in San Ramon, have family, oh, of course, have family in Daly City, because Filipino, South City, everywhere in the peninsula, I'm well represented, and especially in like San Jose, Milpitas, Hayward, that area. Yeah. Absolutely. Where are you from originally in the Bay?
I'm from Marin, which is the widest part of the Bay. So
wasn't that where they filmed Big Little Lies? Or was,
maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. You know, it's very, I know my mom chose the widest part of the Bay to live. I'm like, what the hell? I could have been in Asian Wakanda instead.
You're in Marin. No, that place, that, were you Marin? Is that what you said?
Yeah, San Rafael specifically, a little bit. Like 20 minutes north of.
So how, because like, every time I go visit New York, there is a very different shift of energy. I love New York in terms of that. And also I love New York in terms of like, everyone is aware of everyone, even though you don't like everyone. Whereas in LA, there is no awareness. it's just so weird. Like the energy, because it's like in New York, you're forced to realize, hey, other people exist around you, where in LA, it feels like everyone is just so self-centered, including myself.
Oh, same. I've noticed that. I sometimes when I go to the gym, I'm like, people will walk into me because they're looking at themselves in the mirror too long. They're looking at themselves while walking and they don't, that's for real. It's insane.
It's crazy. And also, you're a twin, right?
Yes, I have an identical gay twin brother who is in Tucson.
What's your
Arizona.
Brother's name?
Matt.
What's your brother's name? Matt. Oh, so it wasn't like a Dylan and Don, so like your parents were going to do a D&D kind of thing.
No, they're like matching names. They kind of like cringe at, like, they're like, oh my God, like the twins who are like the two like same names, my mom was like, no, that's hokey. So
wait, did you dress alike? Did you all dress alike younger?
My mom put us, I guess, yes, similar, not like identical stuff, but like, you know, red and
white. Like Destiny's Child.
Yeah. Actually, the exact outfits. So
the exact outfits that Destiny's Child wore, you and your brother. Who wore the third one then, if it was?
Oh, I guess that unfortunate third pack would not be used. But yeah, me and my twin, she made like a point to separate us. Like in elementary school, she put us in different classes so we wouldn't become like codependent.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the movie you chose, you chose this movie called Kung Fu Panda, released in 2008. So like what I like to do here is that kind of describe where we were, like, as a culture, as a world in 2008. So I kind of, like, look back and I'm like, okay, it kind of makes sense. It kind of, like, putting everything into context and when this came out so we don't come after it too hard, you know? But, like, in 2008, a lot of shit happened. It's kind of wild. Like, Breaking Bad was released. Amy Winehouse won big at the Grammys.
That's right.
No Country for Old Men won at the Academy Awards. Madonna, I think Madonna, was it Madonna? Or someone was, yeah, Madonna, John Mellencamp were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh.
What else happened? Hulu launched in the U.S. 2000, can you believe that? It feels like that seems so long ago, but not, right? Like, Hulu seems new still.
I don't remember Hulu in 2008. I just remember it, like, the late... I don't remember, like, watching Hulu shit in 2008 at all.
I think it's because I remember it launched, and it didn't have a... Like, it was one original... I think it just was a platform to put shit on, right? Like, how Netflix was, until Netflix started to make original programming. I don't think Hulu had original shit yet. And also in 2008, March 16th, 2008, are you a big musical person? Because are you a big musical theater Broadway person?
Oh, so, bitch, March 16th, yes.
Yeah, because you wrote a musical, an off-Broadway musical, right? Or co-wrote? Or were you part of one?
Yeah, and I went to Yes, yes, yes. I helped co-write one, and I went to school wanting to write for musical theater. So like I love theater.
So you will love this little bit of trivia. On March 16th, 2008, Next to Normal premiered off Broadway. And Mariah Carey overtook Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley's record for 17 number one U.S. hits with her 18th Touch My Body.
Touch My Body, I knew, yes.
What else? Oh, the MCU started in 2008 with Iron Man. Can you believe that? It was Iron Man was released May 2nd, 2008. Same-sex marriage was the first day of same-sex marriage, legal same-sex marriage in California was June 17th. Taylor Swift released her second studio album, Fearless, on November 11th. And Barack Obama became the first African American president of African American to be nominated by a major political party. He would later on to win. Fame was released by Lady Gaga. The Beijing Olympics were happening. A lot of shit was going down in 2000. It was popping in 2008.
A lot of 2008. Stuff.
Twilight came out. The first Twilight movie came out in 2008. Oh my God. Right? There's a lot that happened. So Kung Fu Panda was like really a part of this major year of culture in this interesting way. It's not
the biggest event of them all.
It was the biggest event. I want it bigger than Barack Obama. No, but so Kung Fu Panda was released on June 6, 2008 by DreamWorks Animation, directed by John Stevenson and Mark Osborne, written by Jonathan Eibel and Glenn Berger, rated PG, starring Jack Black, Dustin Hoffman, Angelina Jolie, Ian McShane, Seth Rogen, Lucy Liu, David Cross, Randall Duck Kim, James Hong, James Hong, Dan Fogler, Michael Clark Duncan, RIP, and Jackie Chan. And this was the summary via Rotten Tomatoes. Poe the Panda, Jack Black, works in his family's noodle shop and dreams of becoming a kung fu master. His dream becomes a reality when, unexpectedly, he must fulfill an ancient prophecy and study the skills with his idols, the Furious Five. Poe needs all the wisdom, strength, and ability he can muster to protect his people from an evil snow leopard named Tai Lung, played by Ian McShane. So, with all that said, Dylan, what is your connection to Kung Fu Panda, and like, why did you choose it? Like, is it a major part in your hero's journey? Like, what is this? Why this movie?
I remember seeing this vividly. I was with my family, and it was I believe like I was going to a sports camp, and then after the sports camp we all wanted to watch Kung Fu Panda, and I just remember watching it and being like, this is my favorite movie I've ever seen. And it remained that way for a long time. We thought it was so funny. I loved the premise of it because I did karate a little bit. So I think I was connected to that and connected to Poe's learning how to fight for himself. And I thought the score itself was so beautiful, written by Hans Zimmer, especially the scene where Oogway ascends from the peach tree. Like me and my brother learned, like after that, we rushed to the piano and learned how to play it because we were so obsessed with it. And like, you know, he'd play it on the oboe. I'd play it on the piano. The Oogway ascends.
Oh my God.
Theme.
Oboe piano duet. Come on. Oboe piano duet. Do you play any other instruments?
I used to play trumpet. I wasn't that good. And the trumpet was quite painful on the mouth.
But you're a pianist, as it were.
But I'm a pianist, just when it comes, like, hardcore, just my favorite one.
That's kind of amazing how you heard. I mean, I think that's I want to say that's an Asian kid thing to do. Or maybe just a very music nerd thing to do. Just like, you hear something you like, and you, even if it's in the wrong key, you'll play, just as long as you get the melody right, even if it's in the wrong key.
Yeah. So let's be real. You have perfect pitch? Asian kid thing. Yes, me and my brother did. We both had perfect pitch.
You did? Yeah. Do you still have perfect or relative? You do?
We both do. So we would like, we are both horrible at reading sheet music, horrible, but we could hear a song and then go to the piano and start to play it. So like we heard Ugwe Ascends and we were like, oh my God, we love Ugwe Ascends. And so we would like play it on the piano and he would learn it on oboe.
Wow, so. I'm so excited. You are like maybe the second person I've ever met who has perfect pitch. And I've oh been God. In like band and chorus. I was in chorus and when I went to Texas A&M University. There were many people will just relative pitch. There uh-huh. was this one during this era of Filipino R&B, like in the like early, late 90s, early 2000s. Oh, yeah. There were all these Filipino pop groups, and there was this one Filipino R&B group called Panay, and her name one of their members had perfect pitch, and every time they would do an acapella song she would just sing the note and then they would just perform it perfectly, and I would be so like anyone with I'm just like really impressed with anyone with perfect pitch. I don't know why, even though I'm not like that big of a music nerd, I just think it's kind of amazing that you have that. And now you do you think you could still play Ugwe's Ascension on the piano?
Absolutely.
Or maybe the trumpet?
Yeah, not the trumpet, but the piano for sure.
But like, why, you know, does, so that this movie was just very interesting to me. After watching it, I remember watching it, I think I was a journalist, like a baby journalist, and I reviewed it. I remember loving this movie because I was like, oh, it's so fun, and it's like
yes.
being flawed and like unexpected heroes and, mm-hmm. and all that. Revisiting it last night.
Yes.
I think it's still a great movie, but in the scope of 2023, it's so interesting to watch it because yeah. I think the first thing that I noticed was the non-Asianness of it all in a very
yes.
Asian movie.
Yes. Exactly.
Because out of all the characters in this movie, the core cast that I read in the beginning, yeah. only three Asians. James Hong,
yes.
Lucy Liu, and Randall Duck Kim. Oh, no, four, sorry. Randall Duck Kim and Jackie Chan. Those are, yeah. they're only four out of, I don't know how many, but that's not a lot. And
yeah.
back
and
then,
the hero... Yeah, the hero being Jack Black, like this like boisterous white dude who's like, I don't know karate, but I could learn, like, you know, like that kind of, I know, it's like it should have been, I don't know, voiced by an Asian character, an Asian
yeah, or
actor.
Asian, because it's so, I was thinking about this while watching, I was all, even back then when it was a majority Black or even Latino themed animated series or something, they would use Black actors, but this one they're not necessarily Asian because they're animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but they're in Asia, so
they're in, oh my God, it is, they're in Asia, it's such, it's so based and it's so obvious that it's in Asia. It's like when people watch the Avatar movie and they're like, well, I don't know if it is Maori or like, because it's not, it's
yeah.
like James so clearly is referencing and making like
Maori.
It's so like clearly like indigenous people that he's like, it's, you cannot make the argument. Yeah, that he's appropriating, yeah. that you cannot argue that
oh, it's so true.
Anyone can play this. Yeah.
Oh, God. It's like, oh, and I think the fact that, I guess, that it is all anamorphic animal, you know, these animal characters, it's a little more forgiving, and it's a children's film. I could forgive
yeah.
it, but I think in today's lens, it just doesn't make sense, right?
Yes.
And
no, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, it stays with you
yeah.
because it is like this very interesting, it's like a very basic story. Let's get
yes.
that out of the way, right? It's like,
yes.
And that's fine because it's an anime, it's a kid's film, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like watching it now, it's just like, I know, like the more, I guess, older we get, we just kind of start to dissect things. And it's like, it's not like I hate this movie. It's just like, oh, this could have been an opportunity, but it wasn't. But absolutely. In context, and kind of like what we were reading before, because we were about to enter into Obama's America, you know,
yeah,
we were seeing kind of these pockets of representation start to pop up because of the campaign and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting when this movie came out, because it was like, we were starting to get these glimpses of like the very, very zygote of the representation matters movement, right? I guess. Not movement, but conversation, right?
100%.
Or am I just being too reaching?
No, I think that's 100% true. 100%, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, bash the movie because it's, like, an animated film, but this franchise is still happening. And I don't know how to feel about them using the same actors. Would it be okay to switch?
Completely okay to switch. And, you know, I do think that, you know, I feel like if this were to be made now, or like this movie would be made now, I would hope that there would be more consciousness in the writing and the casting, that they would want to cast more like actual Asian voice actors to voice the fucking majority of these characters. And I also believe that it's like a lot of the times actors will be like, oh, I don't know, it was like a different time and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of actors shy away from actually taking responsibility, like white actors who play these POC, like a lot of them like shy away from taking responsibility of being like, I actually did take away an opportunity from a person of color. And more opportunities for that by me doing this and more money going into my pocket. And that's something I regret. A lot of actors will shy away from saying that, but I think more actors should say that and just be like, yes. Yeah. Like, because a lot of time they're like, oh, I just want to work. I just want to work. And it was the studio who chose me to do this. But I think actors should take more responsibility in their part of agreeing to do this and put money in their pocket and, you know, take away these opportunities from, like, people of color.
Yeah, I think you saying that reminded me, I don't know if you remember this, like, I remember this was, like, right smack dab in the middle of Black Lives Matter and the pandemic movement, or Black Lives Matter movement and the pandemic. But in Big Mouth, Jenny Slate voiced the black character Missy, and then later she was like, oh no, I'm gonna step down, and then Ayo Edebiri on the Bear, which is great, she was a writer on Big Mouth, and I think she stepped in for the voice instead, and I think that is very, that's mindful, I feel, and I'm just like, and I'm wondering if it's like, oh, is it too late for them to switch? But I'm like, it doesn't bother me as much. But I'm just like, oh, it would have been good, right? It's like, if Jack Black would have been all, hey, I don't think I should be doing this voice anymore. I would be happy to give it to.
I think he could and should.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like, because I feel like, and then even with Angelina Jolie, who is like the United Colors of Benetton of Hollywood, you know, she voices Tigress, so it's like, you know, and then like, I'm very curious to see, like, if you want to go in deeper, like, how much Jackie Chan and Lucy Liu and James Hong got paid, you know, I mean, I'm sure they didn't get paid much compared to,
compared to Jack Black and Angelina and the white voice actors, and I know. I am curious to see those numbers, and I'm sure those numbers aren't good.
Yeah. But no, I think it's just so interesting. And I mean, I think I watched Kung Fu Panda 2 and I kind of dropped off of that, but it's clearly has become a successful thing. So I'm very curious to see what they do to, because I think they've been a little bit more mindful, because as I was, like, doing my research, I think Michelle Yeoh does a voice in one of the sequels. They bought in some other Asian voice actors, but I think it's still very white. And
100%.
I think it's like, I'm like, oh, well, maybe, you know, it is what it is. Maybe it's just, like, time to make something new in this space, you know? But I also do want to talk about the character. This is just me being, like, hella extra. But, like, Tai Lung, the villain, played by Ian McShane. Like, Tai Long is hot. I'm not gonna lie. Like,
yeah, like, Tai Long, and yeah. He's a big chest. He's a big chested bitch.
You? Him? He's a panda. You're a panda. What are you gonna do, big guy? Sit on me? Don't tempt me.
Yeah, he's like this queer bear daddy that's like into bondage. Because in the we're British? Introduced to him. And he's British. Like, we would see him at Folsom Street Fair, definitely. Right?
For
like,
sure. Yeah. I know.
He's giving that kind of energy. And I think this also just, it's so funny because, again, watching this, I saw so many villains in animated series are queer-coded or they're queer or they're like, it's for like, sure. Even though Tai Lung isn't necessarily gay like Jafar is, because Jafar is...
No, Tai Lung's gay. Tai Lung's like a top, though, like
power top, but, I think.
Yeah. But definitely gay, very much queer-coded, you know, daddy.
He is a daddy, because that's kind of like, and he has like this very, he's so like, you know, he does not skip chest day, let's just say that.
No, he doesn't. It's like he was working out in that, you know, like prison holding thing that they had for him in the cave.
That prison holding thing was weird too. I'm like, that's right? A lot, man. I mean, it's like, it's okay, we get he's dangerous. It's like,
he's dangerous.
Give him some, maybe he wouldn't be so angry. You know, maybe he wouldn't be so angry if you wouldn't, you know, oppress him so much.
And, you know, like, I felt so bad for the people who worked there. I'm like, wait, you guys have to work in the freezing cold there and everyone else is in this sunny valley, but you're in this cold, icy dungeon. Like, I hope you're getting paid well, you know?
Yeah.
These rhinos.
I wonder what that, like, if, I think those rhinos, that's kind of like kind of the low ranking officials who have to go guard. But also at the same time, wouldn't you want your best people guarding Tai Lung?
I know. You want your best people guarding Tai Lung, which is plot hole. But still, it's like Tai Lung. Yeah, he, I remember that.
Do you think he's misunderstood?
Yeah. Because he was a student. Remember, he was a student?
Yes.
And
he was a student.
He
wasn't like allowed to get the scroll, and then he threw a temper tantrum, right?
He's dramatic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's dramatic. Like, he expresses his emotions and he was punished for it.
I know, it's like instead, maybe the solution here was, Tai Lung, what can we do to be on the same page? Instead of, like, coming at him with, like, you're the evil one, you're the bad one.
Exactly.
We could have, like, yeah. And this speaks towards Asian culture. You know, we don't talk about our mental health, guys, enough.
Oh, this all comes back to Asians' identity with mental health. And go to therapy, Asians.
No, I do think, I don't know if Tai Lung has a standalone story within, like, I know that there's four movies, one coming out in 2024. There is a series, I believe, and then, like, some short films. I would want to see kind of, like, a Tai Lung, like, I don't really like villain origin stories that much, but I wouldn't mind a Tai Lung kind of like spinoff.
I would,
you know,
fully buy a ticket to watch Tai Lung spinoff.
Yeah, and then maybe
absolutely
we explore his queerness. You know, we.
I think so.
I mean, for crying out, he's a snow leopard.
Leopard print. I mean, He's serving pussy. Like, honestly, I feel like Tai Lung hit and quit it for a long time with, you know, other snow leopards and stuff. Then he fell in love with, you know, I think...
the martial arts.
A crane. With who? Mm-hmm.
No, I said he fell in love with martial arts.
With martial arts and a crane.
And a crane. Yeah.
And the crane broke his heart. And then the scroll, and then it's like, oh my God, he's devolving.
And it was just too much. And that's why he, I think when Shin Fu.
It was like in Laganja season 7, she was like, it is too fucking much. I look stupid, you know, and Untucked. That was Tai Lung. So I empathize with Tai Lung.
So Tai Lung is basically Laganja, Ashranja.
Tai Lung is Laganja.
And so I feel very attacked right now. Remember
that? Yeah, exactly. That's like literally him being in the cave in that prison. It's like, yeah, he's feeling very attacked right now. How is he supposed to feel in this moment?
And then, but then look at what happens to Laganja. Laganja has an arc. Laganja has this arc where she embraces, I think. Laganja's trans, am I not mistaken?
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
Yeah, trans. Yeah. Laganja came out as trans, and then they did that sickening split on All Stars. You remember that as a lip sync assassin?
Oh, absolutely. That,
so I expect, I don't know what Tai Lung's journey is in the franchise, but hopefully in part 4 he does the splits and him and Poe have a lip sync. They lip sync for your life. How about that?
I would love to see that. Poe, voiced by, I don't know, Harry Shum.
Who would you... that's what I was trying to think of. Who would you want, Asian actor-wise, to see voice Poe? You!
Oh, man. And this is why I've brought this to the podcast. I think should be a femtop Asian guy.
I think what you were mentioning Poe earlier, and I was like, I have Jack Black characters, even animated, it takes me a while to hold on. Can you hear the sirens?
I can't.
Okay, I'll just pick up. Okay, I'll pick up where I left off. What was I saying again? Sorry.
Oh, you were thinking of people to play Poe.
Oh, yeah, Poe. I was just like trying to think of actors to play Poe. Yeah. And you should do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'd love. I think Nico. Thank you, and I will. I think Nico Santos would be great too. I think he'd be a great.
Oh, that actually would be good. Actually.
Yeah.
I think Nico would be kind of dope at that.
I think he'd be great.
What I was talking about earlier. How Jack Black's characters are kind of hard to digest in the beat. You know, like, even every movie I've seen him in, I'm all, ugh. You know, like, comedy-wise, like, in his very beginning. But now I like him. But before, it was just, would just be like, he's this goofy, clumsy, schlubby kind of guy. Kind of. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a PG-rated version of what Chris Farley used to be kind of thing, right? And kind of being, like, very wild. And then, like, when he would act, I'd be all, But then I'd get used to him. But I just think, like, to his credit, I think he does a good balance of making this, like, this really ignorant white man. And then also being a very, you know, empathetic and willing to learn and listen, you know, type of guy, right? Bear or whatever, panda.
I think when I watched it many, many times, he made me laugh a lot. So, and you know, the poignant parts were good of the film. So, I mean, yeah, but just, you know, give it to someone else.
Well, was also another queer quoted character is Tigress. Angelina Jolie is always, she's giving like power lesbian, right? Like, very
100%.
Because she also, Tigress gets shit done, and lesbians get shit done.
Oh, for sure. No, for sure.
I really, but
like,
also,
she's a lesbian with multiple homes.
Yeah, yes, like a home in Tigress. Multiple countries, like not even just domestic.
Of course,
she has like homes in, you know, Rio and like in Greece. But she gets stuff done. Of the Fantastic, not Fantastic Five, what are they called? Furious Five. Who were kind of like, who would you want to see more of? Or who were like some of your favorites?
Ooh. I really did like, oh, I really liked Monkey.
Jackie Chan. Yeah, Monkey was fun.
I liked Monkey because he was kind of silly and I liked that.
I did. I liked Monkey. I liked Seth Rogen's portrayal of Mantis. It's really funny that Seth Rogen. I think that was just funny to have Seth Rogen voice a praying mantis in this very Asian film.
Oh, I thought you said acupuncture would make me feel better.
Trust me, it will. It's just not easy finding the right nerve points under all this fur. I was gonna say fur.
I think that was funny to me.
I love that.
I like Lucy Liu as the Viper, as Viper.
Oh, thanks.
Viper feels very cunty to me. Like, you know, I feel like
Viper is cunt. I agree. It's kind of like brr, 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 really like really like, you know, it's just like really long and just like very piercing.
I feel
just
bam, like, bam. Yeah, I feel like if out of all the five, if anyone was were to be a part of a house, like a voguing house, I think it would be Viper, you know? I think Viper would serve. Like, I think they would be cat. You know, I think Viper would be of the house culture.
100%.
But, and then, like, Crane, I think, was also, Crane's fine, you know, whatever.
Crane's fine.
So also, I think what I was also thinking about this is like all, I don't know if there has been, but I'm like, I was trying to envision this whole series as like an anime. Like, what if this was created as an anime? I actually think I would like it better, but also
I think
it
could fully work as an anime.
Yeah, I don't think it would work for kids though.
Not for kids. It could, but I feel like it could fully have more adult themes and very much absolutely work as an anime. Are you kidding me?
No, that's the thing I would want. I would want a dark version of Kung Fu Panda because I feel like would same. Work. Because then we could like explore the backstories of Mantis, you know, or Viper and all this. Yeah. They may have trauma that they're dealing with. And
exactly. And Tai Lung being like an Orochimaru kind of character. Like, I would love that.
Back to Tai Lung. Yeah, she's the star of the show. They should just shift this whole thing to Tai Lung, you know, like call the franchise Tai Lung. Other than like, what was one of the, hold on, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this question. It's an easy question, but it's such a basic question, but like, what do you really love about Kung Fu Panda? Besides, I know you like played the music and everything, but what was it? Was it like cultural? Was it just like, or you were just like, oh, this is fun and it just looks fun? Like, or how, or like, as you look back at it, why do you think this struck such a chord with you?
I think it struck such a chord with me because it kind of represented everything that my family loves. Like, my family, we laugh a lot. We are a big, like, making jokes at the dinner table. And it was in the context of, like, you know, it was set in China and it was about this thing, like, martial arts that I was already interested in. So I think in combination with, you know, as along with the music, just the heart of it being a very joyful and like hilarious, laugh out loud, big kind of like, you know, our family, my mom and my brother and I aren't like subtle humor bitches. Like, we like, I don't know. We're not like, oh, the most sophisticated, smartest thing. Like, my mom and brother and I, we like,
yeah,
We love physical. We love just like big kind of broad humor. And stuff, so yeah, yeah, exactly. So it was everything that we loved. It was when it came to the writing and the jokes inside of there. And I felt really compelled by it because it's this, you know, the underdog story of the animal who people doubt and can't.
Yeah, I think I think that was it first for me than it before it being Asian, right? At that time, 2008, like we said, it's like, oh, we weren't really, I hate using that term woke, you know, but that term woke wasn't in the zeitgeist. The whole Black Lives Matter wasn't in the zeitgeist. Like, Asian hate wasn't in the zeitgeist. So it's just like, I really tried to think of where I was at that time. And I was just like, oh, yeah, it's a good underdog movie. An Asian movie, it is not, right?
No.
Yeah.
It's set in Asia. Yeah, but it's not. It's like, it's like a white underdog in Asia.
Yes. But it also goes along with like these very, it kind of just goes in tradition with Hollywood of these past movies that have a white guy representing martial arts. We saw that a lot in the 80s with, like, remember Three Ninjas? Remember Surf Ninjas?
Oh, yeah.
100%. Even, like, Chris Farley, again, you know, Beverly Hills Ninja, you know.
Yeah.
There were all these. Oh, even, like, Kung Fu, the original Kung Fu, it was all white people, right? And
yeah.
That's kind of, like, I was like, oh, look at how they remade it for the CW, and it was all Asian. And I just look at it back then, and I'm like, oh, I think we weren't thinking about it back then, and that's why it wasn't a big deal. But in retrospect, it is kind of a big deal. And but also, it's just like, I'm not mad at it, right? It's just that,
yeah,
we could do better than this. And it's like, oh, if we're gonna make a part four, that's the thing. If we're gonna make a part four knowing what we do now, why are we doing the same thing? I think that's kind of what, that's my nerd,
I agree,
my DEI activist person coming through.
Yes. And even thinking about, you know, what's that Karate Kid movie?
With Jaden Smith.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm thinking before. About the 80s one.
With Ralph Macchio. With
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. I was just wondering.
It's pretty much the same thing. It's pretty much the same thing.
It's like
right?
It's white underdog learns about Asian culture. That it's like as a plot device for him to overcome other mean white people, you know?
Yes.
Which
is the problem. Yeah. That's the problem. Not the actual movie. And it's like a repeated, I feel like it's still a repeated thing with different window dressing, I guess you would say. It's not blatantly the same thing. We see it a lot. And that's kind of the main problem with this movie for me, at least. You know, it's just that.
Yes.
I think it's fine. I think it's fun. But it's just like, ugh, come on, man. It's like.
Yeah.
It's not doing any harm. For sure.
Yes. It still holds a really dear place of nostalgia and like love in my heart because of the nostalgic memories I have of it, because it was something that made me laugh and made me moved and made me, you know, excited. And like the character's boisterousness and kind of like outward clumsiness and just kind of like, was something I think I identified with, you know, and lack of not self-conscious, lack of self,
lack of, what's the word we're looking for? Inhibition.
That was something
I
liked.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the whole point of this is the whole podcast is just like, I think so often I talk about it on the podcast, like we, you know, the whole cancel culture thing is like, oh, everyone is waiting to get mad at something. I think that's what the culture is now, right? Everyone's waiting to get mad at something. And that's why, like, kind of revisiting this movie is just like, oh, at the time, of course, it was great. But, you know, I have questions about it now. But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, it meant something, you know,
yeah, to me.
To you, at least. Yeah, yeah. Or, like for instance, like, the episode before this, we did Barbie. And that movie's fine, but there's a lot of problems with that movie, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
In terms of, like, yes. queerness, in terms of... in terms of like people of color and how it's represented, but
yes,
that doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
Yeah, and I think exactly.
It's so hard these days because it's like as soon as you criticize something, people will be just like, "Oh, that means you hate it." I'm like, "No, it means
no."
No, but I'm just saying when people, that's how this, and the vibe is lately, right?
Yeah, it's like we can have nuance. There's a lot of we can have conflicting emotions about something, you know?
Yeah, come on, interpretive dance. You were...
Yes! Buto.
No, it was... Mm. The toe yeah. contract, Martha Graham.
Yes, absolutely.
No, it is just kind of... Every time I revisit something, like, with this podcast, I've been rewatching a lot of stuff, kind of just like, oh, wow, I thought I liked this. But I not. But even something that aired 1 year ago will be problematic. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, so yeah. Nothing is ever perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
With you as a comedian and like a writer and also like kind of just even your identity, because, you know, if I'm not, are you Hapa? Are you, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
Like,
Hapa.
Yeah. 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 Like, how is it being a comedian right now and like, with the whole cancel culture vibes, and how mindful are you when you like write jokes or just write, and where do you pull all your kind of vibe from, and how cautious are you, I would say?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that because there are jokes I would tell in 2018 that I would never tell right now. And like, it's what I try to lead with when I'm writing a joke is what makes me laugh really, really hard right now. What makes me just, what interests me to say. And I try to lead from that place and find humor from that place, that the place that something that I would want to see or something that I find interesting. And sometimes I feel like I'll tell a joke maybe where I get mixed signs from the audience and I'm like, either because the audience is like, not the funniest, or it's like, I don't know. Can you go there? Like there, I don't know. Like there's a mix, and like, I'll try to read that and I'll try to match it with what I find most interesting and funny in the moment. And then go from there. So like, you know, that's how I try to work and build material. But yeah.
Go on.
Go ahead. I don't want to offend anyone or like hurt anyone.
Oh, no, you're not offending anyone. I was just saying like I'm just like in terms of like, is there anything off limits for you when you do your comedy? Let me rephrase that. Is there anything like kind of like you're extra careful talking about, like when it comes to, you know, any topics?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Oh, it's like what are you extra careful in like handling with your comedy?
Well, one in particular, I sometimes talk about rape trauma, my own experience with it and stuff. And sometimes it will make audiences uncomfortable and they don't know how to respond because it's like, oh, this is really dark. I don't know if I... But what I've found is comics are really kind of crazy and fucked up and they'll laugh. And that's like a lot of the dark stuff is my favorite stuff. And but, you know, audiences sometimes are a little more... So when it comes to that, I sometimes try to be really careful and preface the audience with that. Or when it comes to talking about, I'm not interested in like talking about subjects that don't feel like, that aren't personal to me, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
A lot of comics do like to talk about, like, oh, this issue that's going on in our culture, in our society right now, blah, 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 blah. And or whatever it is, I don't know. But I feel most compelled to tell stories about myself and tell, like, speak from experience and stuff. I mean, maybe I'll try other stuff, but that's what feels most exciting to me.
That's like where you're at right now with your comedy. Like, you're
yes.
very much. That's, you know, I like that. It's like, it is like trying to find that. Like, when I watch comedians or like any comedian, and especially with queerness and being Asian, right? Like, using our identities to tell a story or to crack a joke. It's like, it's very interesting to see who goes for the low-hanging fruit and who goes for like something a little bit more in-depth and like kind of like clever. Because you could tell, I think I could just tell a lot from like, oh, the relationship with their identity from that. Just, or it teaches us about their relationship with their identity with, like, say, a queer comic or, you know, an Asian comic. And it's like, oh, okay. Do you like pulling from, like, you talk from your experiences. Do you talk about, or how do you handle, how does your Asianness and your queerness inform? I know I've heard your jokes. I've heard plenty of your jokes, but it's like, all, do you lean on it a lot? Lean on that a lot? Or you just kind of, as it comes?
For me, I want to lead with what makes me laugh. And like, my life is through the lens of me being Asian, biracial, queer. So I feel like I wouldn't say that I'm like, oh, I need to talk about being queer because this is gonna, I need to talk about being, because I'm trying to like fill a quota for myself or other people. I want to lead from a place of like, does this make me laugh? Does this entertain me? Is this exciting for me to talk about? And then I talk about it.
I mean, I comedians fascinate me. Like, I think they're so smart, and I think what they do takes. I took one improv class back when I lived in San Francisco, and we had our graduation ceremony. I had to do improv, and I did that because I wanted to be better on camera when I interview people, and I needed to think on my feet. I think there's so much in improv that you could learn and apply to the real world. That's why I took it. And also,
there's so much in improv that informs everything. Stand up.
Yeah, too. It's so interesting. It's like just kind of the flow with life, right? It's like going with the flow. That's what it is. Literally going with the flow. But yeah, it's just so like kind of like how just our identities, like going back to Kung Fu Panda, is like they're using, it's just, the whole Asianness of it all. I don't think this movie has anything Asian identity, period. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at. And that's kind of like the problem, and also that's fine, right? It's a problem that there's no Asian identity in it, but also it's fine that there's no Asian identity in it. That's kind of like my conclusion about this. And I don't, as much as I would like for someone like Nico Santos to voice Poe or something, I get why, because they're in too deep now. They have this whole franchise with like multiple things. But also, if that's the case, then hire Nico to do one of the, you know, series or something like that.
I agree. I fully agree.
Yeah. So let's see. Oh yeah, and then I wanna the closing credit song was funny to me. Because it's CeeLo singing Everybody Is Kung Fu Fighting.
Yes. You know what? Hot take. I mean, I loved that song as a kid. I would fucking like, I loved that song. I would be like in the back of my car, like, everybody was kung fu fighting. Yeah.
No, so that's the thing, right? It's like, it's such a fun song, but it's also a racist song.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. And I was just like, I was already like, oh yeah, this, and this is a feel-good movie, and we end with CeeLo singing Kung Fu Fighting in the closing credits with a very orientalized kind of graphics, and I'm like,
yes,
you know what?
I totally remember that.
I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Because, like, we did an episode with Margaret Cho on Flower Drum Song. Margaret Cho loves it. And her and I thought it was like, oh my god, this is so problematic, but it's also groundbreaking, right? But it's just so funny how we both loved Hollywood's definition of Oriental during that golden age of Hollywood. I love that tacky Asian Formosa Garden kind of font shit. Like,
a lot of the things that were groundbreaking, like, they were. You forget they were groundbreaking. And at the time, like, this person's film, this person's comedy, oh my God, they were the first Asian, Latin, whatever, like, person to do this. Obviously, that comedy is not going to be the most, like it's not going to be the most perfect, you know, like, thing. That's why a lot of people, like, a lot of young Asians now will look at old Asian comics and be like, why did they do the accent? Why did they imitate their mom? I'm like, I would love to see these young Gen Z people try to make it in comedy in the 80s.
Oh, my God.
It's like, are you kidding me? It was a different world. It's like, you can't expect that it's going to be. But at that time, the fact that they existed and were being a successful comic, that was groundbreaking. That was incredible that they broke through.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just like kind of this whole thing. Well, like, they walked so you could run, or they crawled. There was this play that I saw. It's no longer at it was at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. It was Fetch Clay McMahon. I think it was in New York first for a minute with Ray Fisher. It's a play. Debbie Allen directed it. It's about the relationship between Muhammad Ali and Hollywood's first, like, black mega movie star, Stepan Fetchit, and their unlikely friendship. And then Stepan Fetchit, he did a lot of... I don't know if you're familiar with Stepan Fetchit, but he did... He was like, his character was the laziest man in the world. Like, he was bolstering stereotypes during that time. But at the same time, he was the only black actor. And he was basically a millionaire. And then so him, and in the play, him and Muhammad Ali are arguing. And he said, I snuck in the back door so you could come in the front. And I was all, work.
Oh my God, that is...
Isn't that, like, such, shit. Like, a... Like, it says so much, right?
It says so much.
Fuck, and it goes along with what you're saying about, like, respecting your elders. It's like, oh, yeah, people think, you know... Like, people make... I'm 44, and people make fun of... Like, I'm not old, but people still make fun of me because I'm not 20-something or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I'd rather be my age than your age right now. And it's like, because I give less fucks, for one, and I probably have more money than you.
true like, yeah, true.
But yeah. it's just an interesting, and then, like, going to Kung Fu Panda, it's just interesting because, again, it's all about context. And I really want to kind of bolster Amy Nicholson, who coined this term. I think she coined the term on the podcast. She called it context culture instead of cancel culture. And I was all, that makes more sense, because her episode we did, Revenge of the Nerds, and that that movie is so problematic with there's a rape scene in there that's pawned off as comedy, but at the same time, the openly queer black character in there, yes, it was very stereotypical, but they let him be who he is without questioning him. And where, on the other hand, the Asian character was treated like an animal. And it was so, it's just so interesting to see, kind of like, that's why I love doing this podcast, just because I'm, like, revisiting these movies through a different, nerdier, contextual anthropological lens that no one really cares about but me and my guest, hopefully.
No, it is interesting to talk about. It is very interesting to talk about the nuances and contexts of just movies.
Because representation matters. Representation matters, everyone.
Yes.
Hashtag representation matters.
Tai Lung being the box femme daddy. Yes.
Well, no, he's mask. Do you think? No, there's times.
No, you think he's mask.
But there are times when he does have like an inflection of like a Yeah. You know, like kind of like you see his queen coming out once in a while.
Yeah, no, but on Grindr, he would be like Dom, discreet. Like, you know.
He would have, like, it would be like Tai, T-I-E, Lung, L-U-N-G.
Like exactly.
Him. He'll have, like, a harness on. He's a harness queen. For
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
And he'd just be like this, like yeah, that, you know.
But faceless. No face, obviously.
Face, no!
Yeah. More so, or just, like, no
just
picture.
He's like a discreet only, no femmes.
Exactly. Yeah. No, he would. No, Tai Lung would say that. Tai Lung would be like, no femmes.
He said, no femmes, no fats, no Asians.
Tai Lung would. Let's be honest. He fucking would.
Yeah, Tai Lung. Even if Tai Lung is Asian, he's a self-hating Asian. Self-hating.
Oh, you know that bitch is a self-hating Asian. Who talks British, you know.
Who talks British. He's clearly from, like, Southern California, but he talks in a British accent, you know.
Yeah, it's like, dude, embrace that you're from Torrance. Like, Jesus. No.
He's like, they didn't call you Torrance Tai Lung for nothing.
exactly.
Oh my god! I want to create after this. I'm gonna create a Tai Lung Grindr account and see if anyone hits it up.
Please,
let me hire someone on Fiverr to create a Tai Lung torso with a harness, absolutely. And then I'll put. This is becoming a project. I think I'm gonna do it and then make a documentary about it. Anyways, so at the box office, so Panda, Kung Fu Panda. I was about to call it Panda Express.
Oh my god.
Kung Fu Panda, the budget was $130 million. Opening weekend domestic, it made $60.2 million, which was pretty damn good. All-time domestic, it made $215.8 million. All-time worldwide, $632 million. That is so much.
My fucking god, that is so much money.
That's why they made all these the sequels, and now it doesn't matter who voices them because it has an established presence. So
it has an established
IP or whatever.
Come on, Nico.
And also, this was an original IP, which I want to kind of give props to as well. You know, it's an original IP. Mm-hmm. There, it's not based on anything, and I love that for them. Rotten Tomatoes, it's certified fresh on the tomato meter with 87%. The audience score is 83%, so it's pretty even there. Awards, a lot of awards actually. Well, nominations. It was awarded for Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. And it won 10 Annie Awards, which are the animation kind of Oscars in this way, including Best Animated Feature out of 16 nominations. But there was controversy, with some accusing DreamWorks head Jeffrey Katzenberg of rigging the vote by buying Asifa Hollywood memberships with voting power for everyone at DreamWorks Animation. That is shady boots.
That's shady boots.
It got nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Critics' Choice Awards, Golden Globes, Kids' Choice, People's Choice, and the PGA Awards. So it was like, I mean, rightfully so. It was a solid movie, I think, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Trivia, it took 4 years to make, which actually that's not too surprising. It found inspiration from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Hero, Flying Daggers, and Kung Fu Hustle. And I think all of those spoke to that era, like 2000 to 2010.
100%. Yeah, very big in that era.
Yeah, and you could see that in Kung Fu Panda, I think. Production designer Raymond Zeebach and art director Hang Tang researched Chinese culture, art, and kung fu movies to get the vibes for the movie. Yeah, that's great. Animators. This was a funny bit of information I found out. Animators took a 6-hour kung fu class to understand movement.
I love that.
Good for them.
I love a group activity.
They were all at Gold's Gym.
At Barry, yeah.
At Barry's. Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, if y'all don't know, all five of the Furious Five characters are modeled after actual kung fu fighting styles. You know, bear style, tiger style, vipers. I thought that was pretty damn cool. That. Crane style.
That is cool. I like that.
I like how they modeled after that. Oh, and more on our boy, our girl, Tai Lung. So here's the thing. Tai Lung was originally written more sympathetic as a villain when it was first written, and it needed revisions. So they added a story where Tigress tells a story about Tai Lung's betrayal of his father's principles and then his rampage of being refused the dragon scroll to make him worse. So that was added on. That he would become more despicable. Yes. And actually, Poe wasn't written in the way we see him today. He was an unpleasant, obsessed fan of the Furious Five. So then he turned into a clumsy, self-aware, affable martial arts lore devotee. So,
stairs. Who are you?
Buddy, I am the Dragon Warrior.
That was a good decision, I think, instead of making him an obsessed
fan. I agree. Make him likable.
Yeah. Also, the film was originally supposed to be a spoof on kung fu movies, on the kung fu genre. But John Stevenson said he wasn't interested in doing that because he thinks kung fu movies can be really great films. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah, no one's not saying that. No one was saying otherwise.
Yeah. And then as we mentioned, so it spawned many a sequel. 2011, Kung Fu Panda 2. 2016, Kung Fu Panda 3. And now, 8 years later, in 2024, a fourth film will be released. That's interesting. It's 8 years later. But during that time, there's the Kung Fu Panda Legends of Awesomeness series, the Paws of Destiny series, the Dragon Knight series, I think is still happening. And then there were four short films to go along with all of that. One more thing is the films did get more Asian with Jennifer. I want to say, is that Y-U-H? I want to say it's you. That's how you pronounce it. You. Nelson coming on board as director for part two and co-director for part three alongside Alessandro Carloni. Part four will be directed by Mike Mitchell, who directed Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, by the way, and co-directed by Stephanie Mai Stein, who I think is of Asian descent. So,
I'm glad they're putting in that effort. Yeah.
The effort's there. I mean, I think that's a wise move to kind of okay, I get it. You're trying because I understand if they chose a different actor that it would cause such, because you know how people are and how attached people are to certain things. Yeah. People would probably cause a riot if Nico Santos takes place of Jack Black on Kung Fu Panda, then, you know, the vitriol. I wouldn't want that for Nico.
Me neither.
Yeah.
But it would make me want to see the movie more.
It would. And it would get a whole new audience. I'm telling you.
Yes.
I'm telling you. Well, Dylan, so before we kind of wrap up, do you have any final thoughts on the Kung Fu? KFP.
Kung Fu. KFP. On P.F. Chang's.
On P.F. Chang's Kung Fu Panda Express.
I think
I felt very pleasant going down memory lane thinking about this movie, because it made me so happy as a kid watching this, and made me laugh. When I log off of this, I'm gonna play Oogway's Ascent on piano, probably.
Do you have a full-size piano where you're at?
An electric.
Are you gonna get a full-size piano?
I can't. I don't think I can fit it in my apartment. So.
But if you had the money, would you get one?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I used to be a percussionist. I used to be in drumline, and I sang tenor one.
Oh, tenor amazing. One.
But sometimes I miss playing music. Like, there's... Like, I have this guitar in the background here in my room, but, like, it needs to be restrung. But okay. As nerdy as this sounds, there's, oh God, I'm going to sound so gay. There's something so cathartic and, like, unmatchable when you play music. I'm sorry.
Oh, of course, sorry. Bitch. Yeah. No, sound gay. It's the best.
There's something there, because I remember I used to bust out four mallet solos on the marimba, bitch, and I would tear that shit up. Yeah.
Yes, bitch.
Come on. Let's start a band. Let's start a L.A. orchestra.
Let's do it. A orchestra.
L.A. gay orchestra. I'm sure we could fill it up fast, because every single gay in this town was probably an orchestra or band or something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But, do you have anything? I know we're in a strike right now, but, and there's really, we're in a weird time. Are you WGA, pre-WGA? Are you any
WGA.
Unions?
WGA.
We stand support for you here. And you've been picketing, I saw. You've been picketing once every so. What's, in your opinion, what is the hottest picket spot? If you were to do a Yelp review of picket spots.
Oh. I went to the Netflix Sunset one. It's really hot. That one is very, very hot.
Well, not literally hot, but like popping. Not, you know, it is hot, obviously. Like,
I think Netflix Sunset was always popping.
Really?
Yeah.
The Netflix Sunset is the popping one. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can promote? Are you doing any dates? Do you have anything like you want to talk about? You want to?
I don't have any one man right concert. Now, but you could follow me on Instagram at Dylan Adler _ or on Twitter at Dylan Adler 6 or on TikTok at Dylan Adler 7. So that's where you can. You know, three Dylan Adlers from fucking Aspen, Colorado, who are teenagers, took my handle. So it's what I have to do to survive.
At least those exist. Are you going to go watch Kung Fu Panda 4 when it comes out? Should go watch it.
Let's do
maybe
it.
We all maybe, let's go plan a trip. Let's
plan, do it.
whenever it comes out. Well, we don't know when it's going to come out with the strike and shit, but, you know.
Yeah.
It may not come out until 2030. We never know. But we will be there. Dylan... First off, thank you so much for taking the time out. And also, it's just good to know you and finally connect and meet.
Same,
and I'm so glad you are here in LA, part of the wonderful community, hopefully. I hope they've been welcoming you with open arms here in LA.
It has been very fun, and I'm so happy to finally connect with you, Dino. It's been, I'm so happy that we're in the same town.
Yes. And then I'm sure we'll see each other. We're running into each other soon. But Dylan, thank you so much for chatting. And thank you for listening, audience. Wow, I sounded really annoying at the end.
The Problematic Fave podcast is presented by Diaspora and is created, hosted, and produced by Dino Ray Ramos. The series is also produced by Sanjay Sharma of Marginal Media Works and edited by Brian Aguilar. Special thanks to Cam. Subscribe to Problematic Fave on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to rate us. Diaspora is a media platform that amplifies intentionally exploited communities through its work. Follow Diaspora at Real Diaspora on Instagram and Twitter, or visit thediasporatimes.com. Follow Marginal at MRGNL Media on Instagram. You can send us all your problematic faves on social or email us at thisisdiaspora@gmail.com.